The driving force for changes in the global economy is the continuing revolution in computation and communications, something that sometimes is referred to as the process of globalization. There have continued to be sharp reductions in the cost of, let's say, intercontinental phone calls. This means much greater integration of the world economy. It means that the shift of backroom operations can take place to countries other than, let's say, India and Ireland, that were the most important destinations in the early part of the century. Businesses have an increasingly global perspective in framing their decisions and strategies. This is already true for markets, for output and for sources of supply, and for the sources of funding as well, but it is increasingly also the case for the location of production and for the uses that corporations make of the labor force. There has been a small but significant revolution in transportation, a dramatic drop in air freight and bulk carriage costs. In fact, we have developed a new terminology to describe some of these trends. We talk about containers, about tracking systems, hub airports, overnight shipping, and so on. The implication of this is that location is no longer as decisive a factor as was the case 30 or 40 years ago. Businesses today look for inexpensive labor, they look for adequate skills in the labor force, and some measure of social and political stability, and an environment favorable in general for low production costs. If these are not available, then they will pack up and they go and establish themselves elsewhere. We see an increasing role of alliances. A good example of this, for instance, is Singapore producing telephones in China for the US market with Taiwanese capital and an Israeli technology license. More and more services are being supplied over long distances, and this is a potentially huge market for developing countries moving forward. Countries that are offline in one area that is not offset by some fantastic advantage in some other area will lose out economic activities where geographical location is no longer so important. And we see this, for instance, very clearly through the indicators put out by the Doing Business report. I think that part of the excitement and the commitment that the Doing Business project has inspired in many countries all over the world, especially in the developing part of the world, has to do with the desire on the part of the authorities to create favorable business environment conditions that will attract not only domestic investors, but also foreign investors and other economic agents. Yes, perhaps one should not exaggerate these trends. There is still quite a bit of loyalty to home societies. A lot of investment by multinationals still takes place in their domestic markets, but the trend is clear. And what happens at the margin is, of course, what is important. And at the margin, the trend is clear. Now, what is the implication of having growing populations on the one hand, and the emergence of a new world economy with these structural features? I think the implication is that this translates into an unprecedented rise in complexity in economic, social, political, and environmental systems. And I'd like to say two or three things in this respect. First, human institutions are struggling to rise to the challenge of a rapid change because they were not designed for these changes. Some recent examples that come to mind are, for instance, the management of the 2008-2009 global financial crisis, which was not foreseen by the IMF and by central banks and other economic authorities. And the United Nations has important responsibilities in the area of security, but over the last few decades we have seen, of course, a number of crises in Africa and Asia and many different parts of the world where the UN has struggled to rise to the challenges presented by this crisis and by other troubled spots around the world. These human institutions tend to be hierarchical, they tend to be rigid, they tend to be slow, and sometimes they're vulnerable to political manipulations by large shareholders. At the same time, the nation state is in crisis. It is a territorial concept defined by a geographical border, but the economic system, of course, now straddles national borders. Governments are having to relinquish control in major areas. Trade, finance come to mind. And this is being done in an orderly way, such as in the European Union, or in a disorderly fashion in the rest of the world. And this leads, in turn, to considerable stress and struggle. Likewise, the environment as a system has gone global. Chinese power plants sending acid rain to Japanese forests is one among many, many dozens of such examples of interactions and externalities associated with the global nature of the environment. The AIDS epidemic earlier on recognized no national boundaries. As a result of these factors, of course, there is growing public dissatisfaction with politicians and politics more generally due to the inability of these to tackle or to solve big problems. And as a result of this, there is a rise of populism, not only in the developing world. Populism was a phenomenon that we often associated with immature stages of development, especially in countries that did not have long traditions of democracy. But now populism is also emerging very quickly in the developed world. And so all of this essentially translates into what could be characterized as a crisis of governance, or the existence of a governance gap, as sometimes it is called.